Welcome to 21st Century Saints podcast and live stream series. We are finally getting this episode out in podcast form, again recorded at the end of 2021. It's now the first few weeks of January 2022. Things got a bit crazy for us at the end of last year, I'm not going to lie. It was, kind of a lot. So, we're getting this to you in audio form finally. And as usual, if you have any questions, comments, anything that you would like to chat with us about, we'd love to hear from you. As usual, come find us on Facebook, on our YouTube channel, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us on TikTok, on Instagram. We just love hearing from you guys. Thank you so much, and we hope you enjoy this episode. And in this case tonight, I have an interest in climate change and all things to do with the stewardship of our planet. I'm really excited about this episode tonight because we haven't covered something as relevant and really important for today and the future as we have with this subject. So with that, I'm going to reintroduce our friend of the podcast, Dr. Sheldon Greaves. Do you want to say hi and share a little bit about your background?
Sure. My name is Sheldon Greaves. I have a PhD in ancient Near Eastern studies from the University of California, Berkeley. My main area of specialty is the Hebrew Bible. But I also co-founded and for a time was the chief academic officer of Henley Putnam University, which was the first university designed from the ground up, at least in the United States, to serve the intelligence, counterterrorism, and executive protection industries. I've also bounced around in the citizen science movement, and I currently work in cybersecurity for a major financial corporation. So I bill myself as a guerrilla scholar because that's about the best description I can think of for what I do.
Absolutely. Our friend Peter Bleakley refers to you as a ninja Indiana Jones, but guerrilla scholar, I think.
That's right. Awesome. That's right.
But we also have Andrew Fellows with us. Andrew, would you like to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about who you are, where you're from, and what your interest is in the subject?
Sure. So I'm Andrew Fellows. I'm a member of Community of Christ and also part of the Abolish Poverty and Suffering team. And we've recently brought a proposal to our church in the UK to declare a climate emergency, which was great to do. It all passed nicely. And within that remit, we like to keep our heads on, and going to COP was just one of those things. We've been to a few rebellions before, and we thought COP was a good place to go so we can see if we can influence people and their persuasions.
Absolutely. And thank you for being here tonight. We really appreciate it. I know that last week was pretty intense for you. So thank you so much for your time tonight. Now, we also have with us Michael Clark. Michael, it's great to have you here. Would you like to tell us a little bit about who you are, where you're from, and what your interest is?
Well, I'm Michael, and I'm a member of Community of Christ, also a member of Extinction Rebellion and Christian Climate Change. Used to be a member of the LDS Church. At the moment I'm unemployed, but I'm an artist. I just call myself an artist, so that's me.
It's great to have you all here. Thank you so much for your time. So what I want to ask about first, we're going to come on to the COP stuff and get you guys to talk a little bit about that, but I'd like to know, first of all, is there a climate emergency? Whoever wants to go first, could you maybe speak a little bit to what's actually happening right now? Because there's a lot of sort of conservative liberal debate. Is it actually a real thing? So whoever wants to chime in first.
Yeah, I'll have a go at that if you like.
Well, I think Andrew. Shall Andrew knows that, all Michael? The figures. Yeah, go for
I wouldn't
it.
Say I know them. Okay, so we know that we're seeing an increase in the temperature of the Earth, the average temperature of the Earth. We've seen that growing steadily right up to a time of pre-industrialization. And then suddenly, once the Industrial Revolution started, we're seeing a hike in the temperatures and also a hike in the amount of carbon dioxide that's in our atmosphere. Now, carbon dioxide is a really good thing to have around because it warms our planet and we need a warm planet, but not to the extent that is there at the moment. And if we follow that graph through, we can see that it's escalating higher and higher and higher as we go towards our time now. And the feeling is that it will continue that way. We currently have a world temperature that's 1.2 degrees above pre-industrial levels. COP was all about trying to get it to 1.5. We'll see how we're going. So we're seeing a rising temperature. Rising temperature in our air means that a warmer air can carry more moisture. And that's why we're seeing a lot of rain at the moment and big rainfalls, because our air can hold a lot more water than it could before. And also droughts and just severe weather around the world, yeah. And what might be just slight problem for us in the UK, or look, it's a bit warmer than it is normally, can be devastating for people who live in the southern hemisphere and the southern countries. Mm. So, yeah.
Dr. Greaves.
I can tell you that right now we've had 40 inches of rain in the last 30 days, which is unprecedented even for us. I can tell you that last year, in the middle of the pandemic, there were a number of wildfires that produced huge amounts of toxic smoke, and we basically were confined to living indoors for a good 2 to 3 weeks. And, basically, you're down to coping with it by pretending that you're trapped in a James Cameron movie. Yeah. You're just, and this is becoming normal. I mean, did anyone see the story about what's happening in Aswan, Egypt, where they had a freak snowstorm and they've had a scorpion plague, where thousands of these black fat-tailed scorpions, like 450 people have been stung, 4 of them have died. It's like the ghost of Cecil B. DeMille is throwing all kinds of shade at everybody. But this is becoming average, normal. Oh, ho hum. Yeah, another plague. Okay, yeah, whatever. You know. It should be screamingly obvious to everybody by now that we are in a real pickle. And I couldn't help noticing too, just a couple weeks before the COP conference, this cannot be coincidental. The office of the National Intelligence Council released a national intelligence estimate that was dedicated exclusively to global warming. They've never done that before. I mean, the Defense Department has been sounding the alarm about global warming since the early aughts with their quadrennial threat assessments. And we all know, you know, what tree huggers they are over at the Pentagon. But this is the first time that I've actually seen, you know, a national intelligence estimate that was dedicated exclusively to global warming. And it was very interesting. In fact, they kind of predicted some of the dynamics that that manifested themselves at the conference, you know, about the difficulty that it was that there would be with, you know, the fossil fuel nations. And they go on and talk about, you know, the geopolitical tensions that are rising and various other things. It's an interesting read, and you know it's free to download, so you know I recommend it. 24 pages, it's not bad.
And what's the name of that document so that we can put it up in the show notes?
Yes, it's called the Well, the full title, actually, let me do this. Let me give you the serial number. It's NIC-NIE-2021-10030-A, and it's called a National Intelligence Estimate, Climate Change and International Responses, Increasing Challenges to U.S. National Security through 2040. If you just Google National Intelligence Estimate and Climate Change, you'll probably come up with it.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's, you know, it's a free download. And you know, it just gives you, to me, it conveys the sense of urgency that that people who are concerned with global security are feeling about this issue.
Michael, tell me, we hear this often in the United Kingdom, when it gets a little bit warmer, that's a good thing, right? We're so used to cold and, you know, is it really a big deal in that it's so far away from us? Do I need to be that concerned?
I think we all need to be concerned at the moment with how the temperatures are warming up. We're seeing our news in England and all the things that have happened in America, you know, where Sheldon had to stay in all the time. It's warming up. We notice it now in the country. I like to be out in nature. And while we're in lockdown, it became a bit better a bit. But because of the fumes and all that, you know, it was hard for nature to get on. And we heard about floodings and that, and, you know, in villages and all over England. And it's hard for those people at the moment that live in a house which has been flooded, and they're trying to sell their house and they can't because no one will buy it. So, yeah, I can see it happening. And if we don't do anything, it's only going to get worse. Maybe it may be affect how we grow crops and stuff. So.
Yeah, so, Mike, oh, look, so my tea's arrived. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So, yeah. Ooh.
Hello, right. Helen.
So,
hi, Helen.
So, Michael's been right. Flooding in the UK is picking up. In fact, we found now that they used to call the floods once in 100 years. And they're now once in 20 years. And for some poor people that live in those sort of areas, they're seeing themselves flooded out once or twice. And I even know places in Yorkshire now where they've been flooded twice in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
And so much so that they now can't get insurance on their houses. So it's a shame.
Yeah, we're driving through areas of Scotland, and I mean, I know this will be the case, you know, down there too, but I never thought I'd see, we'd be driving through seeing sandbags at the doors as just par for the course, mm-hmm. because it's every year we're getting massive flood issues. Okay, I guess what I want to know, and I think this is the question that sort of most people are sort of wondering about, is do we really need to be that worried? How worried do I need to be?
Okay, so I think the one thing I'd like to say on that is that the weather systems we're having now is due to our emissions 20 years ago. Okay, and we're now at 1.2 degrees. Now, the governments would like to get it down to 1.5, but actually, if we look at the COP as an example and look at all those countries that said, okay, we're going to do this and we're going to cut this and we're going to cut that, well, the UN have worked out exactly what that means for our future temperatures, and that's 2.4 degrees. And you think, well, 1.2 it is now, dealing from 20 years ago, we're now looking at the emissions which are now greater than they were 10 years ago. And it's a real worry about what it will look like at 2.4 degrees. We know what 1.2 looks like, and it's pretty bad. It's going to look horrendous when it gets to 2.4.
Is that, so two questions. Is that inevitable? is sort of the where logically that takes us. But also we've got Doug who's asking how will rising seas affect the UK. These things have all been considered and thought about.
No, it hasn't actually. I've got some friends who live in Edinburgh, Portobello, and they live 3 streets away from the beach, and they were saying that the forecast for them is in 40 years' time, the sea will reach the main road. So those people that have houses on the beach. Sorry, Michael.
I think also we were talking about flooding the other day. And London would be flooded, and half of our coastline will come in, maybe to the centre of England. So we'll lose some towns and villages. So I don't know how far away that will be.
Are we completely sure? Okay, Dr. Sheldon, you've read that document. Okay, so is this inevitable? Is this going... yeah, that sounds really scary. But... really?
Well, here's the problem, and the National Intelligence Estimate doesn't really get into this, but the pollution that has created global climate change is not like other pollution. You know, conventional pollution problems in the past, if you have, say, raw sewage going into a river, you set up a sewage treatment plant, you stop the flow of pollutants, and the river recovers, and it goes back to the way it was. And that's great. But greenhouse gases aren't like that, especially carbon dioxide. If you shut off the flow of pollutants, if we were to stop all the greenhouse gas emissions right now, it wouldn't start getting better. It would only stop getting worse. Because those gases, they stay in the atmosphere for a long time. I mean, centuries. And we've kind of blown past Earth's capacity to pull that carbon dioxide out of the air. There's always going to be that surplus, and it's going to take a very, very long time for it to come back down to normal things naturally. That's why you hear so much about carbon capture and carbon sequestration and that sort of thing, is because that's really the only way that this is going to get better. So at the moment, what we've got right now, we're stuck with it. And as it gets worse, it's going to get worse. A metaphor that a friend of mine likes to use, it's there's a tendency to think of global warming like a thermostat. You turn up the thermostat, the heat gets hotter. You turn it down, things get cooler. But he likes to use the image of a rickety wooden table with bricks getting piled on it. And you put bricks on the table. Those are the carbon emissions. And if you slow that down, well, those bricks are still accumulating. And if you stop, the bricks are still there, and eventually that table is going to give way. Now, the other problem that we are dealing with here is that most of the world's population lives near the coasts. You know, it's like within a 50 or 100 miles. People like the water, right? But that's all going to start going away, and those people are going to be driven inland. We're going to have less coastline. So, and I think one of the problems that we've been grappling with is there's a tendency to treat global greenhouse gas emissions as if they were a conventional form of pollution. They're not. They don't obey the same rules. And even in some of the government documents, you know, from the EPA and whatnot, that are talking about some of the climate change issues, and you know, like some of the documents that were generated to justify rollbacks in emission standards during the Trump administration, they don't see that. They don't. On both sides, they don't grasp this essential nature of greenhouse gas emissions, that they're there and they're stuck there for a long time.
Yeah, that,
so I guess the answer to your question is yes.
It's pretty serious, isn't it?
It is. Yeah.
I'm going to obviously, we need to talk about actions and what's going to happen. And, you know, we'll explain a little bit about what COP was and what the how successful or not it's been. But I guess one of the questions that I know will be coming from our audience when... So, when was it now? 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, we had some of the top leadership in our church came to the UK and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And I remember when we were having a conversation analysing how it went, one of the things that I was really disappointed in, considering we have this massive climate change conference coming up right on that visit, that was, you know, the timing was perfect, that we weren't speaking to the climate emergency. And some of the comments were sort of wondering, well, why on earth would a church have anything to do with this subject? This is a secular subject, right? So what I would really love is for us to maybe talk a little bit of the theology of actually, you know, should we just leave it in its department and let the people who are interested in it go for it?
Well, for one thing, the Vatican had no qualms about injecting itself into this conversation with the papal encyclical on global warming, Laudato Si, back in 2015, which is a remarkable document. It really is. It's great stuff.
Oh. Which we will link to also. We've got so much homework for all you guys, including me. Well, doesn't it? Okay, I feel like there's something in the scriptures that talks about there being plenty of resources for the world. You know, isn't even this ultimately just going to fulfill prophecy that the world is supposed to, you know, go in this direction, and then Jesus comes back? Michael?
I think in our church we have principles in the Community of Christ, enduring principles, and one of them is the sacredness of creation. You know, and when I was with you the other day, we read the scriptures about how it was our responsibility to look after our earth, and that's how I see our church's view of it, and that's how I try to live, to campaign against climate change, to do the best I can to help it being healed, and to pray about it as well. So.
I love that, and I want to talk more with you about what that looks like. I'm trying to find. I don't have my scriptures handy here, but you know, in the Pearl of Great Price, there's a section where there's a, you know, some verses where the earth is sort of described as a woman, you know, crying out in pain. When is this going to end? And yet I feel like there's. I mean, I think it's a fact. There's a huge conflict. You know, that I hear from religious groups who are just, you know, that this is just part of the cycle of the earth. This is what's inevitably going to happen. So, you know, can we respect the, I know this sounds like such an awful question, but could we respect the earth and just, you know, this is the way things are going to be? God's ultimately got control over it.
I think personally, I think that the world is on this track to higher carbon dioxide, but not at the rate they were seeing. And the weather systems that we're seeing now, we shouldn't really be seeing for thousands of years. So it's an escalation, really, rather than a natural progression. But there's another side of this we're not thinking about, and that is that we know that climate change will affect the whole world, but it affects the poor communities first. And if we look at this purely on the basis of that we should be looking after the poor communities and looking after the people in those areas, then we need to do a lot more than we're doing at the moment. Whereas we're seeing a few degrees increase, great, we can walk around in a T-shirt, that's nice. The Global South are seeing unprecedented weather systems hitting their countries. And that's causing loss of life now, and it's causing loss of livelihoods now. And it will soon start to cause mass migration north. And something that the West and the North are always concerned about, migration, and yet we're going to see it like we've never seen it before, as people start moving away from the equator where you can't even live. So yeah, I think it's, you know, it's there are multiple angles. I think that we are here to protect the Earth, to save it, to pass it on to future generations better than we had it in the first place. And we're not going to be able to do that. You know, it's not going to be better than it has been in the past. We have already failed in that. Like Dr. Sheldon said, you know, the temperatures, the weather forecast, weather we've got now is dialed in. It's not going to change. It's not going to get better. It's only going to get worse before it gets better. So, yeah, we have got great responsibilities. I believe that God gave us this planet so we could nurture it, so we could take for what we need, but that we can nurture it so there'll be enough for future generations. And we're not doing a good job at that at the moment.
Andrew is absolutely spot on. In fact, if you want to do a close reading of the creation stories in Genesis, particularly the one that starts in chapter 2, you have to understand the code, but it's explicit that the animal world is the direct responsibility of humans. Which is why, you know, when God says, flood the earth, yeah, I'm going to flood the earth, Noah goes, well, okay, I guess I better build an ark then, you know, because that's our responsibility. Right. Our responsibility is to everything that lives. And I find it interesting, too, someone mentioned eating animals. When Adam and Eve are first put in the garden, they're only allowed to eat fruits and nuts. They have dominion over the animals, but they're not allowed to kill them. In fact, they can't even kill them to make their own clothing. God does that. God makes the coats of skins for them. And there's a whole raft of interpretation and extra biblical literature that that deals with that. But it's also part of the basis for the Jewish dietary laws. Later, after the flood, Noah makes a new covenant with God where God says, okay, you guys have proven to be not only homicidal but carnivorous, so I'll make a concession. You can eat animals if you drain the life, the blood out of them. And by the way, if you don't do that, it's the same as murder. And that was the basis of the blood prohibition in Leviticus, which is like, I mean, they're really nervous about that. And the Jewish dietary laws basically are a set of arbitrary rules whose purpose is to reduce the taking of animal life to an acceptable minimum. And the rabbinic opinion, or several rabbinic opinions since then and during medieval times, claimed, in fact, that the Jewish dietary system was a gentle path to vegetarianism. So, yeah, I think that's absolutely correct. Now, it's well known that eating animals does, or raising animals as food does take a lot of resources, and that's true. And there's a lot of, emissions that are associated with that. So, yeah, that would be part of it, and it would probably be better for us anyway.
Could I maybe get you to pull in the idea, you mentioned this on our last episode, Dr. Greaves, where mm-hmm. you were talking about the sort of tension between what the wisdom of the time, you know, sort of the tension between the garden god and the god of the fortress. Could you maybe
What a lot of people don't realize about Genesis is that it's one half of a debate that's going on between the Jewish people who are in exile in Babylon and the Babylonian worldview, which politically and militarily and in every other conventional sense held the upper hand. And the Babylonian creation story, in that story, the chief god Marduk, he builds these alliances against this chaos creature who has her alliances and armies, and they clash, and Marduk defeats chaos in single combat and uses her body to create the cosmos. And then when the creator god finishes creating the cosmos, at that point, in most of these kinds of stories, they create what would be the basic institutions that govern the way they live, the way they the way everything is going to be run. And Marduk, not surprisingly, erects a palace with ministers and laws, and he basically makes it clear that the cosmos, i.e. Babylon, is run on the basis of political power and military prowess and systemic violence, and here's the palace that is at the center of all that. So in Genesis, however, we get something completely different. God creates the cosmos, and there's none of this power play and power struggle. I mean, there are no allies or enemies or rivals or anything like that. But God gets to the point where it's time now, the cosmos is done. Now God creates the institution that defines how everything is supposed to be run. And where Marduk creates a palace, God plants a garden. And I think that is massively significant.
Yeah.
That's that, you know, according to Genesis, that's how the world is supposed to be run. You run it like a garden. You are a gardener. You are not a military conqueror. When that finally came through to me, it just blew my mind,
Yeah.
I can't shut up about it, you know.
It did for me the other day when you were talking about it, and I was when Andrew and Michael were visiting Glasgow, I'm like, you have to hear this. So in the current Latter-day Saint rhetoric, my perspective has been that we get a lot of that type of promotion of, strength, of might. We've got a lot of militaristic references, and, from everything from our songs to, the talks that we're having. And there's a real tension there. But one of the things that I think we were able to see during lockdowns worldwide was a sort of feeling that if we have obeyed, if we have read the scriptures, we've been prepared, and we have in our homes a food storage, we've got out of debt, we don't have to worry, and that's so fantastic. And rather than it felt like that was happening or being taught at the expense of dealing with the problems that everyone else in the world was having at that moment, it was feeling, offensive to a lot of us. So, Michael, would I be able to pull you in a little bit here? Because keeping right. that in mind, this sort of tension between we're doing really okay here, and we're comfortable, we've listened to the prophecies, and we're as prepared as we can be. Your journey, your story of faith was something that I felt was like oxygen. It was wonderful. So at the start of the year, I was asked to do a Sunstone interview where they were talking about, what should we be thinking about? What should the churches be? What excites you? What's the possibilities? And I had got this, I'd been sent this magazine from Community of Christ, which featured your story. You had written some stuff about your experience, and you were experiencing God through this work of the climate emergency, of how you were speaking to the climate emergency. Could you maybe talk about what your story has been, how you're experiencing faith, and why this is so important to you?
So my story with the climate emergency is is I love nature, and before my dad died, I spent a lot of time in nature with my dad. And then we see the problems that are being caused, you know, with poverty all over the world. You know, you can see people that are starving because they can't grow crops, and we've seen change in our the way crops grow in our country. Some of them are coming out too early, and I think, like Andrew said as well, poverty is a big part of it, and it is the poor people that's going to affect first. So I'm trying to think if I'm answering this question right or not.
I just, what I'm loving is that this is church for you. This is worship for you. I find that really inspiring.
I think the name Community of Christ. Yeah.
Well, tell us about hands and feet.
Hands and feet. Okay, that's probably the best thing. Community of Christ is my church. Community is a big word for that. We really talk about, we're a big community of people who love and care for people and the place we live in. You know, we get into relationships with people, and that relationship grows, and that's what made me stay with the Community of Christ, because of the loving relationship. And you can see Jesus in people, in their hands, their feet, what they say and what they see. That's important to me. So.
I love that, and I love the integrity that, you know, that as earlier you talked about the values that you found in Community of Christ, that, you know, you're finding a spiritual home that they are your values. I think that's so inspiring. And tell me something. You are involved in protest. Doesn't that worry you? Isn't that a scary thing?
Protest?
Yeah.
Andrew knows more of the facts and figures and that, but my favourite thing is the protest and trying not to get arrested, because it wouldn't do me any good to get arrested. But I love taking part in the protests. We did one just before we finished up on, I think it was Thursday, and it was XR organised, but it was on a biblical theme. Because it was J.P. Morgan's bank who were the highest fossil fuel investors. And we decided to walk round it 7 times and then stop. And then the walls will fall down. But and as we were going round, we got stopped by the BBC and we got stuck behind. And I think the policemen were having a chuckle that we got stuck behind, but... It was, and then we could hear the drums going, and I said, I was thinking, better get out of here because it's going to come down. But yeah, I love the protest thing. And
I love that, this, because that was what the story that you had shared in that first magazine was about an experience of you going to a protest. And, you know, was it your first protest? Was it?
I think it might have been when I talk about XR Rebellion in 2021, my first rebellion. Andrew did recce the year before. So, yeah, so we started off, we joined up with Christian Climate Action with members from all different religions, and we met in St. James's Park, just in front of Buckingham Palace. And... it was sort of the start of lockdown then, so we had to spread ourselves so we weren't close together. But we marched from there to Westminster, and there was I think Rowan Williams was there, and lots of other people and some TV stars we saw there as well. But as we were marching in to Westminster Square with XR Chesterfield, I was asked to do a flag, a blue flag with a peregrine on and a ram for Derby and a crooked spire for Chesterfield. And as we were marching in, the XR march was coming and we joined. And I could see my flag out there and I was really proud of that.
Oh, that's wonderful. But,
yeah.
Michael,
but it was amazing, you know.
Yeah, I find what you're doing so inspiring. I really do.
I think it's just one of the things that we can do. You know, to stand up and be counted for what you're believing, I think is a Christian attribute, really. It's something that we should all do. Mm-hmm. And to stand up in protest is equally as important. It really shows that you're committed to the cause. And hopefully inspiration for others to do the same too.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk for a little bit about COP26. Maybe Andrew, you could talk a little bit about what exactly is COP for those who don't know, and what did it hope to achieve? Was this really just an excuse for world leaders to go and hang out and go for a holiday? Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, it was an excuse for world leaders to fly in to Glasgow and have a fun time. Yeah, no, not quite. So the idea being that the big nations of the world, in fact, there were 200 nations represented this time, could meet together and hopefully could thrash out a deal whereby we would see emissions reduce in order to keep the temperature of the Earth no more than 1.5 degrees above pre-industrial levels by the end of the century. And it sounds a lot of words there. And we know that there were real high hopes from a lot of the charities, from me, from some of the campaigning bodies, that we could really strike out a deal and we could really to put a cap on how much fossil fuels are dug out or drilled out. But that all didn't quite go to plan. But what I think what it did do was it started a new rebellion because we got, there were words in that final agreement that have never featured in previous agreements. So this COP26 had an end for coal, which was great to see for a number of countries. And hopefully in years to come, when we have COP27 next year in Egypt and COP28 the year after and on we go, we can see coal phased out completely. And then we can start talking about oil and gas as well and start putting those words into the agreement and see if we can see an end date for them too. So it was a good stepping stone for that on the positive side. On the negative side, we already know there's enough oil and gas out of the ground to power us and to keep. And if we used all that, we know we would still end up at 2.4 degrees rather than 1.5. So we need to stop the drilling and stop the digging for oil and gas. And if we can do that, then we've got a good chance of making that 1.5. But it's going to take a really big effort, not just by the politicians either, by us too. Mm. And I think it's time that we start to lead by example.
Dr. Greaves, did you have any perceptions of, I mean, you were aware that COP26 was coming up and you had some, you know, what did you, do you have any thoughts on what was happening?
There was one little story very few people seem to have noticed, but I found it very interesting. There were some statements that were made by some international standards organizations like ISO and ITU, and these are the groups that put together the standards by which companies do business. They're not quite regulations, but they're almost like an accrediting agency for a university or a school. And, you know, if you want to be taken seriously, you have to say, you know, we meet ISO 2000 standards or whatever like that. And there are a number of these bodies out there, and they are gradually starting to insist on climate-friendly practices in their standards. And I think this is kind of interesting because it's a neat roundabout way to get some of these corporations to be more responsible. They're not going to they're going to fight against regulators and they're going to fight against legislation. But you know, if the standards guys don't like it, that's serious stuff. I mean, that's going to hit them in a very tender spot. So I was pleased to see that, and I also saw some stuff about how investor groups are increasingly putting pressure on the companies in which they hold shares, that they don't want them investing in that sort of in dirty technology. How much leverage they can actually bring about, I think, is unclear. Probably not a whole lot at this point, but this is where the protests come in. You know, I mean, this is where the shareholders are going to see those people in the street and think, do I really want to be, on the wrong side of this? There are shareholders with a conscience. Hard to believe, I know, but there it is. So those were a couple of grasping at straw flashes of optimism that I came away with. On the whole, I was pretty disappointed with what happened. I think it was also something of a wake-up call for the American delegation, when they came in and said, hey, look at all the stuff we're doing. And the response was, yeah, and so, look at what you've done up till now. And that was important. I mean, they need to hear that. They need to understand that if they're going to take some leadership in this, they need to get busy fast.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So and I Cole. Want to ask about was there are different aspects of COP26 that fascinated me. What was going on inside with the delegates and the celebrities and all of that, and what was going on outside? So, Andrew, could you maybe speak a little bit about what are your perceptions of what was happening inside, and contrast that with?
Okay. Well, if I give you an example, that inside, 78% of the speakers were white, male, and from rich countries. Okay. But outside, it was the young people, and it was people from the global south that were speaking. And they were speaking passionately about what is happening in their country and why they need to have a place where they can speak and where people can listen to what's really happening. The places that are affected by climate change now, not in the future, really. I think that's a big contrast. And until go on, Michael.
I think as well, when we were doing a vigil, two African ladies, young ladies, come up to us who were delegates, and they actually joined in the vigil as well. But I said, how was it going? And she was doing a great job. They were doing a great job. She says, it's a shame that we can't have our say. In there, they couldn't have their say. They were told, that they probably couldn't speak up, but all they had to do was listen. And I think that's a bit unfair. They should let people speak up, though. They probably would have done other delegates that were more, involved, but I was impressed with the young there. It's good to see that the young care about their planet.
What was the atmosphere like, yeah, Michael? You talk about vigil, so there was a lot of sort of prayer action happening too outside.
Yeah, because that was the place to be. There was a blue zone and a green zone. The blue zone was right where the delegates would walk in. So a lot of action was going down there, and it's It's amazing what people come up with to protest. We have Christian Climate Action with a really old coat with all badges sewn on from different churches and all this lot singing a song about climate change. We have young people talking, you know, people that are suffering in their land, you know, because of climate change, talking. And we went to a youth talk, and it had one girl from Northern Ireland, and she really spoke up about how she speaks up about climate change. And I guess with all the troubles that Northern Ireland had there and what's going on now, and she is focusing on that, it's really important.
Absolutely.
So I just love it.
You know,
I love XR.
My heart is with protesters. I have a rebellious heart, and I was so disappointed because I've been looking forward to this. This had been put off from the pandemic, so it was supposed to happen last year. It's happening this year. I had so much time to prepare, and I really seriously injured my knee right before it. So I feel like, as you have been, you know, during the time that you guys had come up here, to hear how you were experiencing it and seeing it, you know, through your eyes has just been incredible. What I do know is that protests in Scotland, Glasgow especially, they are so fun. They are carnival-like. And I knew that because the young people were so, you know, leading the way on this, that it was going to be that type of atmosphere. Now, often with Extinction Rebellion or, you know, some of the other, you know, direct action protests, with any type of protest we see throughout the world, it comes with police presence, it comes with, you know, high arrests. And one of the BBC headlines the day after COP had ended was asking, why were there so few here at COP? So do you guys have any thoughts on why it didn't get angry point of violence?
Yeah, I can probably answer that. Do you
want
to go, Michael?
Yeah, go on.
Okay. You go first.
I was really impressed with the every day when we went there, we used to see the police, you know, by the bridges and that, and we always said hello. So we got into conversations with them. And there was police from all over England, Leicester, Merseyside, all over the place. And one day I noticed that they had different caps on, some of them. And so the white cap was the sergeant, the red cap was the driver, the orange cap was the evidence bringer in, and they did have a light blue and a dark blue, and one of them told us that the dark blue were the armed ones. But I was really impressed with some of the police, how they said they sympathise with us. And when we were there, I only saw one arrest. So
there were. I think
I'll hand over to Andrew now.
I think it was less than 10 arrests.
I know that two of those were spraying the police with paint.
Oh, sorry, I'm going to fact check that. So, in honour of our BritVenger friend Nemo, so there were reports that and fears that there may be up to 300 arrests a day, which you would expect with, you know, young people and, you know, lots of thoughts. The actual numbers have been far lower, with police saying there had only been a total. Now, this was across how many days? Well, almost 2 weeks, 10 days?
Yeah, 2 weeks,
A total of 70 arrests so far.
Okay.
Which was pretty impressive.
Now,
I want to, just on the police thing, because I think it's worth congratulating Police Scotland do an incredible job. But what's really interesting, I think, also is that protests in Scotland, but also during COP, They will join in your TikToks. They will stand and take photographs with you. They're very much encouraged to be, you know, part of the fun, you know, and carnival atmosphere. And I just think, how good is that? How, you know, what a great example. So I want to take you guys to a YouGov poll that has just come out today, which people were asked in the UK, how, from what you've heard and read, how successful do you think the COP26 climate conference was? And I'm going to ask you guys that question. But I'm going to let you know that the results here from the YouGov poll were not good. Less than 1% thought it was very successful. We have a, you know, a sort of, most people are saying here, but 40% saying it's not very successful, 17% saying it's not successful at all, 20% the most optimistic, 20% are sort of saying it was fairly successful. So what do you guys think and why?
I think there were good inroads made, but overall it was very disappointing. There was another conference on at the same time as COP26 was being held in Africa, and it was the dividing up of Africa for the use of oil and gas reserves, and that was far more successful than COP26 was. I mean, that went ahead, and you know, those regions will get drilled very, very soon. And yet in COP26, we had the real opportunity to stop the things like that happening, stop any new gas and oil exploration. And that those opportunities weren't there. It was said that there were far more lobbyists in the room than there were ethnic minorities. And I think that's probably very true of what of the sort of outcomes that there were. So, yeah, I think overall we're very disappointed. There are some positives from it, and we're yet to see what COP27 will bring, which is why we need to continue to protest, which is why we continue need to be outside expressing to delegates how important their role is, really, and what they can do about changing the future.
I love that.
I think with me, that was a success. The people protesting outside, they were people came together, all different walks of life, come together to protest and to try and change the delegates and leadership of the world's idea on climate change. I like what Greta Thunberg was saying about the blah, blah, blah. It's all talk. And she's true, it's all talk. But they got to do something, you know. Absolutely. And it's going in little steps. But it needs to be big steps.
Yeah.
And Dr. Greaves, do you have any thoughts on how successful it was? And you're on mute.
I'm looking at this from quite a distance away, obviously. I wish I could have been there. That would have been great. From what I can see and from what I've been reading in that part of the press that I pay attention to, not very successful would probably be about right. There's a lot of disappointment being expressed on what happened, or more to the point, what didn't happen. But I also agree that we can't stop. We need to redouble. We need to be louder and more vociferous, more articulate. We need to reach out to more people. And I think, I hope that this is a good time to do it. You know, there's an old Greek proverb describing someone who he won't see the fire until he feels the heat. And I think people are starting to literally feel the heat here. And maybe, just maybe, that's something that can happen. I'm also it also worries me a little bit that persons of faith are not as much in the conversation as they could be. And I don't necessarily blame the people of faith for this. There's a resistance to that sort of thing. And that goes back to some stuff that happened in the 60s. But the end time evangelical fundamentalist types who are saying, well, you know, the earth is going to burn anyway and Jesus will take care of it all and all that sort of thing, that needs to be countered. It needs to be countered loudly and firmly, not necessarily using a 2x4, but, you know, it might come to that. But I'm glad to see, you know, things like Christian Extinction Rebellion. That's great. That's brilliant. I had no idea that that was even a thing. So thank you for making me aware of that, you know, Michael. And this is something that needs to happen because the Bible is a calling, really, for how shall I put this? If the Old Testament has one theme, it's the triumph of life over the forces of death. And if we aren't seeing something like that right now, I don't know when we ever will. The pearl of great price warns against the sin of exchanging life for property. Which I think is a marvelous insight, and people in the LDS Church, you know, I think need to do some serious thinking and frankly some repenting about a lot of this stuff. So, you know, maybe it's time to, you know, work the general authorities a little more. Come on, when are you going to say something about this? Because this is our world. We're doing this horrible experiment, and it's not a good idea to test it to failure. Because we've only got one. We can't repeat the experiment, you know.
And I think that's the lovely thing about, you know, restoration, generally speaking, restoration theology is that this is it, that this is the earth that we're, you know, we're keeping this one. We're not all heading off, you know, this is the one that we're looking after. It interests me that a lot of the work that the UK podcasters have been doing has been focusing on a British rescue. And, you know, we've had the apostles come and visit. The last 2 weekends, we've had a church history representative coming to answer even the difficult questions, even the hard stuff. And, you know, as members of the church, and even as you know, cool podcasters, because of course, you know, we are cool. All of our time was taken up with these questions and thinking about how does the church look. Where, you know, my suggestion is that the real British rescue, the real world rescue, is exactly what was happening outside the doors of COP26. The last Friday of every month in the UK and in Ireland is devoted to climate protest by the kids. Schools are taking kids are just going on strike for the day. On the final Friday of every month, they're participating in a climate strike, and they are continuing that protest before this started, and they're going to keep going after this started. It was so good to see, even in their schools, while COP was happening, the kids were out in the playgrounds protesting. It was beautiful. So what I want to do is to talk about, just, you know, as we come to sort of our conclusions, what are we going to do? What's the plan? Someone has a plan, right?
I think that your poll tells a great story, because that shows us that the people want change. They want it to be successful, and the majority of people wanted it to be successful, but it wasn't. And I think that's the big difference now, is that the people are behind it. We know that the 1% in the UK, certainly the 1% have the biggest carbon footprints. We know that most people want change. We know from visiting the Green Zone, don't we, Michael, that businesses are really up there and wanting to make positive change. And we saw some great innovations while we were in the Green Zone. So we know that business is behind it. We know the people's behind it. We just need to make sure that the governments are now behind it. And if they work for us, as they're supposed to, then they need to adhere to what we want. And we want to see change in a positive way. But we can't just put it all on governments and all on business. You know, the IPCC report was very clear. We need to reduce our carbon footprint by half by 2030. And that's each of us need to reduce our carbon footprint by half. If you don't know what your carbon footprint is, World Wildlife Fund do a really good online. You can work out what your footprint is, and then you can start to halve it. And there's even suggestions there. So that's it from me. Reduce your carbon footprint by half.
I think your carbon footprint, that's something I've learned to reduce some stuff in my life. Like, I don't really drive, so I don't fly. I mean, there's some good eco wash powders and deodorants you can get that are no plastic. And, you know, even stopping having one meat meal a week can help the environment. Mm-hmm. Am I right, Andrew?
You are right, yes. One meat meal. Mm-hmm. Saves about...
And
can I just ask you with the audience, Michael, how you got to Glasgow?
Okay, so I guess me and Andrew are a bit of rebels in our church, and they like to know what we get up to. So the week before that, we were in Hereford, a very peaceful vigil, no arrests. Before that, we went to London, and I've done a few local protests. But Andrew said, COP26, we need to go up. So we arranged with him to go up for 4 days. But we actually drove up in Andrew's electric car, which was really cool. And nobody could say we were burning fossil fuels. So it was good to be in that car. Yeah.
You car shared in an electric car all the way up to Glasgow. That is superb. I love that.
Yeah, I have to say, though, that not everybody could do that. I'm middle class and privileged, and I can afford to do that, and not everybody can. So however you got to COP would have been okay if you were there to protest or there to be a delegate, I think. The world isn't perfect.
Bring the cost of another YouGov poll said that people overwhelmingly would prefer to have the choice of an electric car if it were a cheaper option. You're absolutely right.
Mm-hmm. That's right. We know
some people actually walked. Walked all the way. Christians,
Took them several weeks to get there. Yeah.
Wow. That's incredible.
Mm. Pilgrimage. Perfect.
That's right.
Well, there's, you know, the other thing too that I'm kind of left with is, to me, there's too much emphasis on technical fixes to all this. And this is actually one of the things that came out of the papal encyclical, is that, we have to beware of relying too heavily on technological solutions, because every time there's a technological solution or something that's put in, there's always an unintended consequence of that solution. And really, it's going to come down to behavior changes. So these things about finding ways to reduce your carbon footprint by the actions that we take, I think is going to be critical. And that's really what's going to keep it that way, is we have to be able to basically change the way we live. And a lot of people don't want to do that. Mm. But, you know, it's a new world. And we may not like how it is if we're not, you know, willing to work with it. So
Doug is asking about rail travel here. Yeah, it's electric rail, right? It's funny. I just take these things for granted. Yeah. Unless the Hogwarts steam engine decides to take a tour up, I think we're just off the call for that one. But
I can say that 70% of our rail in the UK is not electric.
Oh, really? Mm. I did not know
70% is not electric. So there's a lot of work to be on to electrify all our rail. And they could have spent the money on that rather than HS2.
Hmm. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Do you know, I hear this stuff about HS2 in the news, and I didn't make the connection about its relevance. It was more economic, I think. Do you want to explain just quickly for the audience what that is?
Okay, so HS2 is a trade line for the rich. It's going to go from London to the Midlands. There was a plan for it to go further north, but I don't think that's going to happen now. It's costing billions and billions to put in place. It will never be carbon neutral in its lifetime. So by the time it is carbon neutral, it'll be out of date. They are plowing their way through 105 ancient woodlands, and we're losing trees that are mature. And we know, but what really stinks about that is that we know that a tree doesn't start drawing down carbon until it's 20 to 30 years old. And the trees that they're pulling down are 300 years old. So we're losing trees. And they are unique habitats, which will never be replaced by saplings. Never. So it's really disappointing. Seeing the videos and the protesters as well, guarding those trees, living in those trees until they're pulled out of them and then the trees are felled. It's horrendous. And it needs to stop. It's a train line for the rich. What it was designed for really was for the rich to get to northern airports, because we knew that they weren't going to get expansions on Heathrow or Gatwick. And so in order to increase the flights, they need to go further north. In order to get further north, they need a high-speed train to get there. And that's what HS2 is.
Yeah. You know, you can feel the god of the garden. It's just the opposite of what we should be valuing, right?
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you all so much for your time. I really appreciate it. I'm going to go around and just get some final thoughts from you guys. But what we would like to commit to doing is not only we'll put up all of the show notes, they are tremendous resources that have been mentioned tonight. We will we'll get everything up in the show notes, but also we want to commit as a 21st century saints that we will commit to halving our carbon footprint. We will keep you posted on how that goes, and we're going to share our progress as we learn, because we've got so much. I assume that just planting a few trees is not going to cut it.
Yeah. No.
Okay. In that case, we're going to go back around then. Could we maybe start with Dr. Greaves, if you want to maybe share some final thoughts as we wrap up?
We have to look more seriously, I think, at the idea of creation in the Bible. What God does in the Bible is that he creates a set of circumstances and then life emerges. We have to start thinking about how do we make the earth more amenable to doing what it does best, which is making things grow and live. And that means that we're going to have to give up some of we might have to give up some of our cherished notions. You mentioned planting trees, which I love, you know, as a thought. But, you know, if you cut down an old growth forest and then you leave it alone and let it come back, it may not come back as an old growth forest. It may come back as something entirely different. And that's just nature doing its thing. Yeah. We have to make allowance for that, and we have to work with nature and not try to, you know, we're going to save you by beating you into submission. That's not a good gardener. That's not a good nurturing strategy. And we're going to have to change the way we live, the way we think about the world and about our place in it. I do hope that we do something like this again, because there's so much more to say and so much more that we could be talking about. And I want to thank you for pulling this together. This has been wonderful.
Yeah, I think we need to get a bigger panel and really, really dig in some more to this. This has been great. Mm-hmm. Andrew, do you want to share some final thoughts?
Yeah, all I want to say really is thank you again for inviting me. Protesting is fun. You're right. It is great fun to be there. I wouldn't do it if it wasn't great fun. To be amongst people that think the way I think, and they want to shout loud, and they want to sing, and they want to pray together, I think there's no better place, really. The people want change. The majority of people want change, and we just need to convince our governments that's the case. That's it.
Amen. Yeah. Michael, would you like to share your thoughts as well?
Okay. My final thoughts are, my heart's with protest and people. Non-violent protests. So people got to keep going, remembering those that went before us, like Gandhi, Rosa Parks, and Martin Luther King, who were people who stood up for what they believe. We need to change the corrupt governments, and we need to hold them to what they're saying they're going to do. And I like the way that Dr. Sheldon said about, we are the gardeners. So we have to show our hands, feet, eyes and ears to be the gardener of that world. And I'd like to thank you for letting us on here today. So I really enjoyed it. And let's do some more.
Let's do it again. Absolutely. That is not the final word. I'm going to actually keep the final word as we close out. I have a little thing I want to share with you guys, but I just want to remind you that, yeah, we are all going to come back, but tomorrow night, 21st Century Saints, is we will be podcasting again at our regular time. We have some very special guests who are coming on to talk about the Order of Eve. We've got a pair of best friends who are coming on to talk to us about women's blessings. One of the pair is a wonderful transgender woman, and her best friend. Their story is so empowering, so special. I can't wait to share their presentation with you, and I can't wait to hear what you'll think of this. This was a life-changing one for me, so I'm excited for tomorrow night. Now, I do want to give the last comment of tonight to the wonderful example that has been Greta Thunberg. After COP, she had sent this tweet. She said, "A reminder, the people in power don't need conferences, treaties, or agreements to start taking real climate action. They can start today. When enough people come together, then change will come, and we can achieve almost anything. So instead of looking for hope, start creating it." And the voice of the young people, I don't think we could put it any better than that, as much as I've loved all of the thoughts that we've shared tonight. So thank you all so much for your time. We will keep you all posted with those links. If you have anything that you'd like to ask our panel, do get in touch and we can forward your questions on. Thanks for joining us tonight, and we'll see you tomorrow.
All right. Thank you.